You're listening to The Pulse on University Radio Nottingham.
Keir Starmer unveils Labour's five missions for the country. Sir Keir Starmer has outlined the five missions he will put at the centre of his party's offer to voters at the next election in a speech in Manchester. So the five pledges are securing the highest sustained growth in the G7 group of rich nations, making Britain a clean energy superpower, removing fossil fuels from all of Britain's electricity generation by 2030, improving the NHS, reforming the justice system and raising education standards. He gave this speech in Manchester. He claimed that his plan would give Britain its future back. It was a very light on policy details, the speech, but these are promised later in the year. And it was the news article by the BBC states that it was striking that the Labour leader spoke about a decade of renewal, hinting that he was already looking to a second term in government.
I mean, it's interesting sort of to be looking so far into the future when they're not already in government.
Well, but they are so far ahead in the polls, Ben.
That is very true. They are pretty much seen as a government in waiting. And sort of with these, you know, the implications of a potential Labour government in the future, once again, we went out and asked the students of Nottingham their particular thoughts. We asked them a couple questions. And so to start off, we asked them, you know, what are their sort of generic thoughts on Keir Starmer's Labour?
Not really any strong views, you know. It's, you know, better than Jeremy Corbyn, but not like he's, you know, doesn't seem to have many strong convictions currently. I still wouldn't vote for them.
He's more actionary, you know, he gives us a reason to vote for him, whereas Jeremy Corbyn, a lot of the stuff he said was idealistic, but he wouldn't give us a solution.
I don't think Keir Starmer is the right leader because he's not charismatic enough.
And in addition to that, we also did specifically ask about the policies. So we sort of went out with the same people and we asked them, you know, had they heard sort of about today's announcement of the new pledges?
I am unaware.
I have, though I don't know what those pledges are, although considering his previous history with sticking to campaign pledges, I'm not entirely sure as to how seriously I should take them.
No, I haven't. I've been busy.
Yeah, I got an email from it. They seem really good. They want to help the NHS, which is good.
Oh, nice.
And so almost sort of from those views of the people of Nottingham, almost sort of a mixed bag there. We have quite a few people that have not been made aware of these pledges. We have some people who perhaps have heard the pledges, but have just think they're a bit generic. And I just sort of wanted to ask you guys, you know, obviously, these pledges are light on policy, as was sort of already mentioned. And do we think that these are good enough to be a pathway into government?
My short answer is no. sorry to be a bit abrupt, but I think I watched the whole of the speech earlier today and the questions afterwards. And whilst I really do believe that Keir Starmer is a good man with good intentions, anybody could have made that speech because it was very, very generic. You know, of course, these policies are something that the whole country wants to see, but there was no, and I know that the election is quite far away, but there were no specific details as to how he would carry this out. And indeed, I know this makes me sound really sad, but I've watched politics programmes every day, and you know, I've sort of searched for the Labour Party to give some indication, really, of how they're going to pay for all of these things they've said they're going to do. And so far, the only three things they've said is scrapping the nom-dom tax status, which, yes, fair enough, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the amount that it would raise isn't really going to, you know, it's going to skim the surface. Sorry, tax break on private schools, which I don't agree with, and then extending windfall taxes, which, yes, to a certain extent could help, but you can't just keep taxing and taxing and taxing. I was really disappointed with the speech. One of the only concrete things he said was that he would stick to the rising corporation tax, which I worry about because there's already businesses pulling out of the UK because of the raising tax. I'm sorry to be a bit, you know, to tear the speech apart a bit, but I think he has good intentions. And I'm not necessarily saying that Rishi Sunak's speech was any better, because that, again, was very vague. But I don't feel Keir Starmer's offering a great alternative, personally.
I mean, it's a very interesting point that sort of you mentioned that anyone could have given that speech, because that is actually one of the things that we also asked sort of the people of Nottingham about. You know, we asked whether they think that Labour is unique enough under Keir Starmer. Mm. And so sort of on that theme of whether Keir Starmer really is someone or whether it could be anyone in those shoes, let's find out what the people of Nottingham had to say.
trying to appear quite patriotic is one. Patriotic and middle ground is probably where I probably associate with them more. Boring, perhaps.
Not particularly. I feel like it's a shift back to a centrist Labour.
Once again, I don't think he's charismatic enough.
And so, yes, sort of a resounding sort of answer. Obviously, we had one in there sort of discussing this idea that Labour is sort of moving back to the centre, perhaps appearing a bit more patriotic. So almost in a sense, moving a bit more rightward from sort of the very left position taken under Jeremy Corbyn. And I suppose, you know, what I want to sort of ask sort of the more politically sort of clued in the room, you know, are we seeing Keir Starmer move more to the centre, or are we just seeing him sort of turn the Labour Party into sort of a so generic sort of baseless sort of basically, I think you can sort of understand the point I'm trying to draw from
this. My opinion is that Keir Starmer is trying to get these Tory voters that are disenfranchised currently with the Tory party, those sort of floating voters in the centre that have historically voted Conservative but also open to voting Labour, just like they did in the during the Blair years. And I believe this is what he's trying to do to sort of make them available to the idea of Labour, not giving them the details currently because perhaps he thinks that will scare them off and doing that closer to the elections. But I don't believe that he will go back and try. I don't believe that he will entice these Tory voters and then suddenly go on about nationalisation of rail, water and energy, all the things that he promised during his during the campaign to become Labour leader. I do not believe he is going to campaign this election on Corbynite policies. I believe it will be on in more of the centre ground, and I believe that's quite an interesting argument when it comes to the position on the left of the Labour Party and how Keir Starmer has effectively told them to get out of the party if they don't agree with him, which is a very, very strong stance that someone with the poll lead that he himself can make. But it says something about what is going to happen to those members of the left. Are they just going to be a quietened faction? Or are they going to... Sorry, Ali, you had something to say?
No, I'll let you finish.
Or do they perhaps split from the party? That is a possibility. If they become so disenfranchised and they feel like Keir Starmer is dishonest and not representing their views effectively. So I think that's quite interesting, because by being so lacking on the detail and banking on these Tory voters, who ultimately could just go, oh, I'll just vote for the Tories, he could lose both the right and the left. So he could lose those potential centrist voters, but he could also lose those core Labour voters that are Corbynite but would be prepared to vote Keir Starmer if Keir Starmer keeps on going on about the fact that he's not willing to engage and debate with the left and include some of their policy ideas.
Just very quickly before, because I know Ali wants to say something, I would say sort of the idea of moving into the centre may almost put them in sort of the danger that the Liberal Democrats almost find themselves in. You know, for those on the left wing, they're too far to the right, and for those on the right wing, they're too far to the left. So no one's happy. But
it depends where you think the majority of the country is. If they are in the centre and they're prepared to be in the centre, then placing yourself in that position is very good. But if the public is leaning towards the right at a certain election, perhaps on single issues like Brexit, which dominate debates, they will perhaps lean more that way. But I believe that currently the majority of the public could be being brought back into the centre ground. There's an argument about polarisation, but also there's so much dissatisfaction in politics. Perhaps they want this sort of middle ground centrist, doesn't want to do anything completely radical, changing, new or exciting, that's quite comforting, familiar and stable. I think that's what Keir Starmer is trying to push forward, and he doesn't really do exciting very well. Like, I think he's tried a couple of times and it never really worked.
Well, that was one of the points in the Vox Pop, that he's not charismatic enough.
It's do we care about that? Do you care about your leader being charismatic? Because Boris Johnson was charismatic and he was also probably the worst Prime Minister we've ever had.
I do have an answer to that, but I know, Ali, you've been desperate to speak for a while, so I'll let you go.
Well, I think the charisma thing is... I don't think it's the largest problem. I think it is somewhat of a problem, especially in a... Well, we're kind of coming in a sort of post-populism world, I actually think, because... by, well, not completely. I do see some ooze there across the room, but we're in the post-Trump, post-Johnson era, and whatever you think of Biden and Sunak respectively, they are not full-blown populists in that way. What I would say about Keir Starmer, and I am a Labour member, cards on the table, a Labour Party member, and a Starmer skeptic, not completely anti him, but somewhat questioning of his views. I worry about his attempts to minimise the role of the left in the party. I understand there are a lot of pitfalls to Jeremy Corbyn, and I'm not a full-blown Corbynite by any means, but if we're talking about the whole point of the first-past-the-post system is it encourages broad-church parties. If you look at the Conservative Party, it's kind of what they're struggling with at the moment, the battle between, you know, soft-right, the One Nation Conservative tradition and these hardline Brexiteers on the far right of the party who are the Singapore on Thames idea, that sort of idea. But when you try and minimise a tradition out of a tradition of the Labour left out of politics, you are, I do worry about a sort of overall shift of the equilibrium to the right. There is somebody very eagerly with their hands up, so Scarlett Ponton, would you like to...
Me and Ben are fighting for who's going to speak next. And I would just say this could become perhaps a battle for the soul of the Labour Party, because the roots of the Labour Party are within the trade union movement, are within the left of the Labour Party. The Blairites have come along in the past few decades with the Third Way, which is an ideology in a very loose sense of the term that grew up in the 90s. So he both keeps on putting his hand up, but I'm going to finish. Give you 10 seconds. So I believe that it will become much more ideological, potentially a split. Oh my god, I'm just going to stop now. Off you go.
I was, for those wondering why Scarlett did just stop midway, I was comically looking at my watch to jokingly time 10 seconds. But sort of a few things there that I sort of want to unpack from Scarlett and Ali. I'll start with Scarlett, then Ali, then back to Scarlett. So Scarlett, sort of, you meant it, the battle for the soul of the Labour Party almost sort of strikes me. It reminds me of, you know, sort of Joe Biden's messaging, sort of a battle for the soul of the nation, the battle for the soul of America, you know, defining what they are as Americans. You know, we might witness the same sort of battle play out with the Labour
Party. The only difference I would make is the people on the left of the Labour Party find it quite difficult to be patriotic, so I don't think they would perhaps use that language.
Wow.
As the well, we've seen the difficulty.
Strong statement.
Well, if we look, Corbyn and the national anthem not being played at Labour Party conference, it is a part of the fabric of the left of the Labour Party that they are not inherently patriotic in the terms of, like, burnishing the Union Jack everywhere, but not that necessarily needs to be patriotic.
To be devil's advocate, though, I suppose they would argue that they are patriotic not in the symbolic flag-waving, anthem-singing sense,
yes,
but patriotic in trying to serve everyday British people. But
Can I, as someone who considers themselves left-wing, probably not quite that left-wing, but relatively, I consider myself relatively patriotic because of the tradition. There are a lot of traditions in this country which I very much am proud of. It probably isn't the typical, like, when you associate with patriotism, I'm not a massive royalist, not a massive XYZ, but I think patriotism has been sort of by a certain group, and I think that it doesn't necessarily have what that very narrow definition that we think of it as having.
And
this has happened. I'm so sorry, Ben. This has been happening since the early 1900s in jingoism, so that's also quite common. What I'd say, Ali, is about the nature of, when I'm talking about the left, I'm talking about democratic socialists. Perhaps you may or may not include yourself in that bracket. Kind of was Ali's answer, but Ben, I will let you speak.
Okay, so sort of going back about 5 minutes to when Scarlett sort of posed the question of whether do we want a boring leader. I would actually argue yes, we do, because I am fed up of seeing sort of politicians sort of constantly in the news, you know, sort of think during the news cycle during Trump. I just want someone who gets on with the job and just isn't in the news every day. I want more cucumber stories. And sorry, Hannah, I will let you speak. I have one more point. Going back to Ali at last, sort of when you mentioned that we're in a post-populist world, I would actually disagree with that. And I would disagree with that because depending on sort of what sort of political thinkers you sort of subscribe to, what sort of conceptions you have of democracy, I would make the case that populism has always been a part of democracy. Sort of looking back to thinkers such as Ernesto Laclau, who sort of theorized, well, that's getting into heavy political theory.
Is that
but,
pluralism or populism?
Well, the interesting thing about Ernesto Laclau is that he almost sort of merges the ideas of pluralism
that's
and populism.
That's very interesting,
because basically, populism usually, in the mainstream sense, is defined as anti-pluralistic. But what Laclau does is he sort of merges this. To very quickly wrap up before, you know, I really go off.
Maybe we're getting just a little too theoretical.
But Laclau sort of merges this idea of plurality and populism, saying, well, populism's as through polarization, through having a common enemy, can unite a various group of people.
And that I agree on. And when I'd like to sort of clarify my assertion of post-populism. Obviously, populism in some form will always exist in politics because it's the nature of it. There will always be a sort of politicians will always frame themselves as fighting against someone to a certain extent. However, we are maybe in the era of post-preeminent populism, like that the Donald Trumps of the world, the Boris Johnsons who played into that sort of position so strongly. That's not to say that it's non-existent in the work of Joe Biden, Rishi Sunak, even Keir Starmer. They all try to play it to a certain extent, but that doesn't mean that they are overwhelmingly so.
Yeah, I would just say on that topic, I think I agree with Ben. I don't think charisma, I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to be able to have both charisma and competence, but I think too often it's proven that that's not the case. You know, Boris Johnson, I think as well, you know, because he had such a personality and he was so charismatic, and you know, the amount of lies he told were easier to people swallowed them because he was able to mask them in this TV personality, you know, that he had. So I think ultimately sometimes having a personality like that allows you to cover up your mistakes better, so people don't get a clear enough idea of, you know, the problems with what you've done.
I think I'd agree, because sort of what Boris Johnson represents to sort of a conservative voter or to people who support Boris Johnson is almost sort of a blank slate of which people could sort of interpret from him what they wished.
Yeah.
You know, some people sort of interpreted him as this amazing sort of mastermind who got Brexit done. Some interpreted him as, oh, he's just sort of a bit of a goofy fella. Mm-hmm. I quite like him. Some would interpret it as him as, you know, he really cares about northern ex-Labour voters. They can draw from Boris Johnson what they wish.
Because there is nothing of principle or substance behind any of his views.
I agree.
So perhaps that might be a good argument for Keir Starmer to perhaps not outline
to stand for principles, but then Greg Hands, the Conservative chairman, has responded in the article saying Keir Starmer has no principles. But you could also make that argument if you say he ran on that Corbynite basis for his electoral campaign and then completely switch. You could argue that Keir Starmer lacks principles if he's so ready to easily betray what he ran for the Labour leadership on. Alternatively, you could just say, oh, he's a shrewd politician who understands the game.
Sorry, Scarlett, are you done? Sorry.
No, but I would just say, yes, I want politics to be boring. I want our Prime Minister to not crash the economy. I want, as we all graduate into the working world, I don't want it to be a complete hellfire, and I want to have a stable government, and I believe the Labour government will provide us with that.
One thing I will say is that when election season finally comes around, the most fascinating manifesto perhaps in years is going to be the Labour manifesto, just because we are so sort of up in the air about what the specific policy. I think right at the beginning of this conversation, that's something you said, Hannah. How much of it will be, Starmer's tried to distance himself from the 2019 manifesto, and for fairly obvious reasons, given the fact that the result was what it was. But I reckon there'll be some elements of it. I reckon the nationalising rail service, that's my early prediction, will be the one thing that stays, the one major thing that stays. But overall, it will be a fascinating manifesto to see what, when Keir Starmer actually has to put his money where his mouth is and actually put concrete policy down on the table rather than sort of benefiting from the bumblingness of the Conservative Party over the past 18 months to 2 years.
Yeah, I think I think I do understand why he's had to change a lot of what he originally said, because, you know, he's trying to distance himself from the Corbyn era, which I completely support that personally. I'm glad he's not letting him back in the party. That's my own personal opinion. But I think there is a risk that by doing stuff like that, or, you know, by saying in his speech more generally, you know, if you don't like my party, the door's open, you can leave. I think that is very on the line in terms of potentially, like has been already stated, alienating the left of his party, which is not what should be happening at all, because, you know, as so they always say, politicians, that their party is a broad church, and I do think that you know, that's really important. So I sort of take that point that people have mentioned about the left of the party losing its voice, and I think he needs to be careful with what he says, because it's one thing to distance yourself from Corbyn policies and from Corbyn himself, but it's another thing to, you know, completely alienate the left, the people who are a lot more left-wing than he is. So I do think he needs to be careful about that.
I think this so far has sort of been a very interesting discussion, but sort of to sort of bring it to sort of a nice rounded close, Rachel, who is sort of a probably less politically active than the majority of us in the room, I would say, sort of as almost like an outsider perspective, would you rather a manifesto that is more open to interpretation, or would you rather a manifesto that is more concrete?
I am not as politically involved as you guys are. You guys are very smart. I just want to say that right now. Like, I am baffled by some conversations that you guys are talking about. Like, I think in terms of, like, manifestos, I'd rather, like, I don't mind how much detail goes into manifestos as long as they're, like, representative of what the country needs right now. So, like, as we've seen in, like, Keir Starmer's, like what he's recommending or that, or what he's planning on doing, he is solving a lot of what he is planning to solve a lot of the pressing issues, such as the NHS, such as the climate crisis. Like, we do feel a bit skeptic in how he's going to do that. We don't have much information, but then it's still like progression, and it's still stuff that we have been saying that we want doing for a long time, like regardless of how detailed that is, how built on principles that all is. As long as it gets the job done, as long as we have a government that gets what needs doing done, I really do not mind. Or, like, I don't know, that might be an unpopular opinion, that might just be me, but just
it's sensible to say that, I think. Yeah.
I'm gonna get, like, crucified for saying that. I don't know, but
no, I think it's a sensible position, yeah, to sort of wrap up this discussion on.
We're on campus and we're online.
University
Radio Nottingham.